first things first, I want to check in on our friend Ben.
Yeah. Bird.
How's the boy's leg doing?
It's, he is in queue for surgery right now, so he'll be getting his operation here in December and then laid out for a few weeks after that. But,
okay.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, you know, obviously you can finish our tour and stuff like that. It just was one of those things that couldn't do any more touring, so we had to cancel the European leg, which is a little disappointing, but we'll make it up.
Right. Yeah.
Sometimes these things happen.
Right.
We are humans, after all.
So I assume he's probably resting up at this point.
Well, he's a little busy right now. He was just finishing up some last-minute Postal Service stuff that came in, and then we're going to go shoot a video in early December, and then once we get home from the video, then he goes and gets cut up right after that.
Nice.
So, yeah. Yeah.
What video are you going to be?
We're going to shoot a video for title and registration.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. Actually, we're shooting it with this guy named Patrick Daughters, who he made that Yeah Yeah Yeahs video, Maps. Mm. I don't know if you ever saw that, and a couple other ones that are really cool, but seems like he had a really good concept, so...
So you guys have been touring.
Yes.
Quite a lot.
Yeah.
Which is great for me. So I love going to your shows. But so you were playing smaller venues, but you know, now you've started to play the larger venues and the arenas.
Yeah.
So which, do you like one better than the other, or are there pros and cons?
There's pros and cons to both, you know. I mean, I'm always really conflicted about it because I always want to play in a place... If we can't do, like, obviously, you know, you couldn't be a house band for a week in a small place, so you always want to play in a place that as many people that want to come see you can come and see you. But there's always that line where, like, sometimes things can be a little too big and just you feel a little bit disconnected from people. So, I don't know, you know. I mean, there's pros and cons to both. I mean, there's just as many great memories I have playing the smallest venues with, you know, 15 people, 20 people there as I do when we played Fleet Center with Pearl Jam, and there were, you know, 12,000 people there. You know, it's like, you know, those, I don't know, they just kind of, it's like a little bit apples and oranges,
right.
Sort of. But
yeah.
Yeah. I don't really prefer one over the other. Although, typically when you're playing those bigger rooms, it means that things are going really well in your career. So, in so far as that goes, then maybe I like playing the bigger places, but I don't know. I don't know yet. Ask me when it's all over which ones I prefer.
So how did your participation in the Vote for Change tour
come about? Well, it came about, we are kind of friends with Pearl Jam folks, just being from Seattle and known various sort of inroads into their organization for a few years. And Jordan's our manager, was talking to Kelly, their manager, and they were kind of talking about things that were coming up. And we'd been involved with Music for America and been doing some stuff on the side. And then this Vote for Change thing came up. So we were like, well, we should try to get involved with it somehow. And then Pearl Jam basically just sort of asked us to be their opening act, which is great. I mean, Pearl Jam has always really been super helpful with local bands, and like they usually take out, I mean, they've taken out tons of local bands throughout the years, Emergency Devils, Sleater Kinney, Mudhoney, Fastbacks, you know, things like that from Seattle, and they've always been really supportive of the community up there. And so that was kind of, them asking us was just sort of an extension of that sort of philosophy for them, but then also because we've been involved kind of on our own politically, it kind of made for really good synergy. So, yeah, I mean, it was just simply a bunch of people sitting around in a room going, hey, do you want to be involved with this thing? And it was a pretty much a no-brainer for us. I mean, one, to be able to tour with Pearl Jam, which were, you know, a band that we grew up with and totally loved as kids, but also just because of the cause itself. So.
That's very cool. Yeah, it seems like your music has gotten involved in so many different facets. Like, for example, being featured on the OC.
Yeah, yes, that's
Seth
true.
Seth Cohen, huge fan of
Cab. Seth Cohen, yeah, exactly.
Seth Cab, a fan of Seth Cohen.
Like. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was so weird when they asked us to do that show. I mean, it was before the pilot, I mean, before anything had been made, they were like, there's a show that Fox is going to do. It's called the OC. It's going to kind of be like 90210 or whatever. And at that point, we were, you know, the record had just basically come out, and we were like, ah, yeah, what the hell? Use a song. And, you know, they used Movie Script, which is on the last record. Use a song, we don't care. And so then we got this call one day. We're like, hey, your song is going to be on the show. And we'd never seen it, hadn't heard anything about it or what was going on. So we're like, okay, let's watch it. And then that was the episode where they get in a car wreck, and then he actually says our band name. Like, they actually wrote our name into the script, which was like, whoa, what's going on here? And then that was like kind of snowballed from there. And then it just became this sort of friendly sort of, I know Alan Heinberg, one of the co-creators and writers of the show, and it sort of becomes this sort of thing where, like, they just have a bunch of really cool people there that are big music fans, and they've always put in really good music. I mean, it's funny that we've been sort of the band that everyone's like, oh, the OC and Death Cab,
yeah.
when, like, Bright Eyes and a bunch of other bands have been on it just as much, but I don't know. We kind of like it. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay with us.
That's good.
Yeah, yeah.
And you also have an exclusive EP on iTunes.
Yep, yeah.
Okay, so how does that... working out, and how did that come?
It was the same kind of thing. I mean, I actually, it was funny, I made the switch to Mac a couple years ago, and then everybody in the band started going Mac, and we sort of got really nerdy about all that stuff and really liked iTunes and iPods, and they just asked us if we wanted to do the iTunes thing. And, you know, we are a band that really, really encouraged, you know, music sharing and downloading, but definitely... in a structured environment where it's not, you know, bands getting ripped off. And I think iTunes is a really, in the music store at iTunes, is a really good example of how something can, you know, get music out to people, but also make it fair for the artist and the person who's buying it. So we just kind of want to support that whole sort of, I don't know, change that's sort of happening where it's a little bit more legitimate. It's not so much just the, you know, yeah, you know what it's like. Yeah. So, you know, anything that we can do to lend support to that, yeah. you know, sort of more professional structure, that was a good thing for us.
Do you think, like, so. Music will go more in the digital direction and not so much, like, on CDs or vinyl? Or...
yeah, you know, I think that there'll always be a niche for... I think that CDs will eventually be the vinyl of tomorrow, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, there'll always be... people always like that tangible medium of, you know, being able to flip through record stores and things. But I mean, you know, I have to check myself because I like it because I grew up and that's how I associate shopping for records, is going to the store and flipping through CD racks and, you know, that kind of stuff. But kids now that are just now getting into music and buying stuff are experiencing in a whole new way. And so I'm sure that it's the format's going to change and it'll keep evolving until we all have jacks in the back of our head and share it, you know, around. But, you know, until then, you know, I'm sure that it'll be interesting to see where it goes next. But I don't really know what that looks like yet.
Right.
Nobody really does.
Right, yeah.
It's infinite possibilities. I hope that it stays in some sort of tangible medium because I really do like artwork and a lot of the, I don't know, there's some kind of ritual about unwrapping something and putting it into your, you know, CD player and pushing play or in your car or something like that.
Right.
It feels really nice. But I don't know. I also love the iPod and the fact that I can carry my whole music library in my back pocket, and that's nice too. So
yeah, so you do have an iPod?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I can't imagine touring without one now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, it's much of a reference library. I mean, it completely eliminates that. Hey, you know, we should cover this song. Yeah, who has a copy of it? Oh, I left it at home.
Right.
You know, I never thought to bring out that random disc. Now it's like, yeah, I got it in here. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, there it is. Yeah.
Do other guys in the band have an MP3 player?
We all have iPods. Yeah. We kind of got nerdy about it. It actually became, it really was a function of just how much we were touring. I got the first iPod because I was really tired of carrying around this huge CD wallet. And when we were, and it really came when we were going to Europe and going overseas a lot, when we weren't shipping a lot of gear, so we were flying with guitars. And so that became our check bags. So we had to only carry our clothes and our sort of toiletries and stuff in our backpacks, you know, our carry-ons. So then suddenly, you know, you're like, okay, I can bring a few extra pair of underwear and socks or my CD collection.
Right.
You know, like, at what point, you know, what do you need more? And so, you know, then I was like, ah, wait, there's this invention, you know, the iPod. Ah, I can, you know, I can solve both problems at once. And so then, I mean, it became a sort of just really utilitarian as far as that goes for us. So
yeah.
we all made a switch, and now they're just wonderful. I mean, like I said, for us to be out on the road, have everything at our disposal.
Right.
It's good.
And you guys used to have, like, tour in a van.
Mm-hmm.
But then I recently moved it up to...
oh, yeah. The bus. Yeah, yeah.
Is there a different, like, technology-wise, like, with your setup?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now I can play games.
Yeah.
And there's the segue right
the
there.
Segue.
Yes. yeah, no. I mean, yeah. I mean, it became sort of a few things. I mean, one, we were having to take out a little bit more gear. I mean, you know, as you sell more tickets and as your shows grow, people expect kind of more of a show. You can't just show up with a guitar and an amp, and if it breaks, and you're like, sorry, folks, show's over. I mean, that may have flown when there's 20 people and everyone could laugh about it, but when suddenly people are paying more and more for tickets and they're expecting something a little, you know, you kind of have to back that up. So we have to bring out more stuff, more room, more people, you know, and suddenly the van just didn't cut it. So the bus is great. So you get the big screen and the PlayStation 2 and the Xbox and the DVD player, and it keeps us entertained in all the off hours that we're waiting before we actually play rock and roll. So,
yeah. Which video games do you like to play?
You know, I have been a PlayStation 2 kid for a while, but recently made the Xbox conversion. So I don't know. You know, my favorite games of all time.
Yeah, like, so
bad. I love the Metal Gear stuff.
Yeah.
Like Metal Gear Solid, and I mean, I was really big time into that. All the Grand Theft Auto stuff is really fun. In its sort of debaucherous ways. I mean, as a kid, I mean, I was just a Nintendo kid. I recently bought one of those Game Boy Advances that have the old Nintendo skins on them that makes it look like an old little 8-bit machine.
Very cool.
Yeah, and then they have all those reissue games that are coming out. I love it because those are the games that I grew up.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like Mario Brothers.
Yeah, exactly. Zelda. I mean, yeah. The creepiest thing, and I was telling you about this, is that I popped in Zelda. And in an afternoon, or as a plane flight home from New York back to Seattle, I almost beat the entire game, but I knew where everything still was, like down to like secret hearts and like weird, and somewhere in my brain, I mean, I hadn't thought about that year, that game in probably 15, 20 years, well, not 20 years, but 15, and I was just like, I sat there, I was more freaked out when I landed, like it was a fun experience and stuff, but the fact that somewhere in my brain, I have all those maps and how to beat all those bosses and like, and then I, you know, sort of going through all the codes that I, you know, all the cheat codes that I still know. And so anyway, yeah, I mean, it's kind of wild how that stuff sticks in your head,
yeah.
You know, in a really scary way, but I don't know where it's stored. Anyway, yeah, but I've been really playing Halo. I play online too, been playing Call of Duty online, and I was a Counter-Strike kid for a while, did a lot of that, but. You know, whenever, basically, it's like whenever I need a diversion from thinking about music and worrying about music and stuff like that, I just pop in a video game and tune out.
Yeah.
It's been great.
Very cool.
Yeah.
How did you get into politics, Aspire?
They came to us, really, which is perfect. You know, they were like, hey, we're putting together this game and we're putting together this great soundtrack, and here's some of the other bands that, you know, have said that they want to participate, and they're all bands that, you know, are our peers and bands that we like and have a lot of respect for, and so that, yeah, this is going to be fantastic. Plus, the concept was so fun. It wasn't like, hey, typically the requests always come in like, hey, can you guys give us an original song? Or like, can you, you know, give us a song from an album or some alternate version or whatever? And we kind of farmed out a lot of that stuff, and we didn't really have much to give, but, you know, Aspire came and was like, we want you guys to do a cover of a, you know, 50s song, and how about Earth Angel? Perfect. That sounds so much. I mean, it's like a direction. It was fun. It was so. We really got into the process of doing that cover and submitting it, and plus to see the list of what everybody else was doing, and it was. I don't. So yeah, they came to us. It was pretty. For me, being the resident gamer and sort of video game aficionado, I'll say, instead of. To work, but it was a no-brainer. I was like, guys, we have to do this. I mean, everybody else sort of peripherally aware of this, you know, I've always been into comic books and toys and games.
You went
and
to
stuff.
Comic-Con.
I did go to Comic-Con.
Very nice.
Spent 4 days at Comic-Con, nerding up. It was fantastic. It was one of the best things I did this summer. But, and so, they kind of just sort of, I said, Aspire, you know, if you guys are ever going to buy a game that you want to play on the Mac, chances are Aspire's going to put it out, and this is a good company, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, okay, whatever. Hey, this is your world. Like, if you say this is cool, I was like, no, but this guy who's doing the game, you know, who's involved with Halo, and, you know, this, they didn't understand it, but they really liked the idea of doing Earth Angel. So we kind of, once we started getting involved with the process, that's when we sort of ran with it. And then now they have it for their sound, which I think turned out pretty okay. Mm-hmm.
Was it different doing that song, knowing it's going to be used in a game?
Um, Yeah, I mean, sort of. We kind of got a little nerdy with it when we were recording it. We kind of decorated the recording studio to look like a sort of 1950s prom. Mm-hmm. We were going to wear, like, tuxes and stuff like that, just kind of like a band, but we, you know, we didn't quite go that far with it, but we really wanted to kind of dim the lights and pretended like we were just a band at a high school prom in the 50s. And I think that, I mean, all along we knew that the concept was that there was going to be zombies and eating, and I thought so we really just liked the idea of this really beautiful song, so we really tried to make it as nice sounding as possible and not, you know, really just do a pretty straight cover of it instead of, you know, making it tongue-in-cheek or something, because it's thought it'd be so funny to, you know, have a zombie running around while this great song's playing in the back. I mean, I don't know, the disconnect of that just seemed really perfect for us, and it really kind of really worked with our sense of humor about stuff. And, you know, it was, like I said, as soon as I kind of explained the concept to people, that's pretty much what sold everybody in the band. So like, yes, let's do it. This will be great. I can't wait. And I think it will be.
Do you think it makes sense, like, music and games kind of coming together? Because it happens
absolutely
more often now.
It is. I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, it absolutely makes sense. I mean, long gone are the days of, you know, just beep, beep, boop, 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 like, you know, synth sounding.
Right.
They sound like ringtone sounding. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can do so much with music now, and it really does affect the gameplay. I mean, I can still remember how rad Metroid was when I played it, and I loved the soundtrack. Castlevania, same kind of thing. And I mean, those kinds of games, and then, you know, what the Grand Theft Auto people did with all of that. I mean, but that was still like licensing old stuff or things that have already been in the public mind, and like doing new things was, I mean, that to me is like kind of where it hasn't gone yet. And I really like the idea of bands, like, you know, coming together, because I think that the creative people kind of occupy the same space, you know, whether you're designing games or making music or, you know, taking photographs or making films or any of that stuff. Yeah, I think all of that, there's a lot of exchange of information that goes on there. Both above the table and under the table, and just it always made sense to me. I was always surprised that it kind of took this long, because to me games are kind of like playable movies, and movies always have great soundtracks, and they had for years. So, you know, now it's definitely starting to go that way, which is way exciting for me because it blends two of my loves in one thing. So, yeah.
Do you think you guys would do another game?
Yeah. I mean, well, it'd have to be right. I mean, I would for sure. I mean, it'd have to be the right thing. I mean,
right.
Like I said, early on, the concept for this game was so cool and so fun that, and again, the soundtrack and Aspire's plans for the soundtrack and all the other bands that were on it were like, I mean, we wanted to be a part of it. You know, we wanted to be sort of in that company, you know, of all of this stuff that's going on. I mean, it wouldn't just be like, hey, that's a great idea for a game and you want to say, yeah, sure. I mean, we wouldn't turn into that band. I think it would really kind of depend. But if there's something really neat going on and it looks like it's going to be, you know, fun and the concept's great and the people designing it and the people involved with it all have similar ideas and everybody kind of seems like they're lined up, be the same thing of why we wouldn't just give our songs out to any movie that was getting made, you know. So, but this one for sure. And we'll see what happens if anybody follows their lead, starts doing this more often with more bands. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great. Your music's definitely getting out there.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I like it. I think it's, I mean, yeah, I do. I think it's really fun that there's different ways you can experience our music. I think it kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Do you see, because I know that when Transatlanticism came out, it just seemed like that garnered a lot of maybe new fans,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
Do you see a difference between, like, the photo album and the albums before that, you know, versus Transatlanticism work?
Yeah, I mean, to some degree. You know, a lot of it's, I kind of just attribute to exponential growth. Like, you know, we did our first record, and it feels like, or it's felt internally like, every record we've done, every tour that we've done, have just been more opportunities. Things have grown a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. I mean, we've been chipping away at it for seven years now, going on 8 years. And so Transatlanticism really just felt kind of like another step in that exponential growth. Like, photo album did that much better than We Have the Facts, and Transatlanticism did that much better than photo album. And I don't know when that's going to peak out, but so far it feels pretty good. And the most exciting thing for us is just as recognition has, you know, come to the band, and so are all these really fun opportunities that we've always really wanted to be a part of, but just wouldn't have never made any sense to have some completely random unknown band involved with a movie or a soundtrack or something. And so it seems to be like this really good momentum for us anyway.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's been surprising. I certainly would have never thought, I mean, when we finished Transatlanticism, I didn't know if anybody was going to like it. You know, it's like, oh, did we make a good record? We were all really worried about it. For some reason, it was the only record that we'd ever finished that we were like, I don't really know. Like, other records we'd finished, and we're like, awesome, did it. I'm really proud of this. And we finished this one, and we're like, oh, man, this is, I don't know what's going to happen. So.
Wow, yeah. Well, I can tell you it's excellent, honestly.
Thank you.
You know that by now.
Yeah, thank you.
And now you're signed to Atlantic.
Yes, that's true. That has happened recently, too.
Yeah. How did that come about?
Same thing. I mean, we've always been kind of flirting with major labels all along the way. There's always been some interest, like, hey, you guys are hot, you know, like,
and
yeah, exactly, yeah. I've been a fan since your first record, the photo album. I love you guys, right? Sure. You know, you know, you get that stuff, and people don't know, and they try hard, and it's really embarrassing for them. But but we never really felt. I mean, early on, there was just no leverage, you know, in any kind of, in that world, it had no interest, there was no interest for us to go talk to a bunch of people when we couldn't bargain with them. You know, it was like, here's the standard rich and famous contract, you want to sign it, and every band takes that road and crash and burn, and you don't have any power to sort of negotiate out of a lot of those standard clauses that, and I say standard because we found out that most of them can be negotiated and removed. So, you know, I mean, and that's what we were doing. We're just waiting to get some kind of leverage and be able to get into a point where, like, hey, we need you, you need us, let's work this out on paper. And it took us the better part of a year to get there with Atlantic. And we got a really, really good contract with them. And everybody there seems really great so far. Don't know. I mean, ask me in a year and a half how that goes. Could be the end of our career, like any band that does it, but hopefully not. We're feeling pretty positive about stuff right now. And that was just, again, just kind of one of those logical steps in a lot of the things that were coming to us, opportunities that we've never really had before. So it made sense timing-wise. We had to go for it.
And I'm sure Barsic is extremely happy for you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's got to be some.
Bittersweet, yes, yeah. For sure. I mean, they are, you know, I can, like Ben wrote on our website, I can remember sitting with Ben and Chris and Josh on a porch and deciding how many copies of our first record to make, and we were all nervous about making 1,000 of them because there's no way we'd ever sell them. And yeah, I mean, he's sort of nursed us along and helped us out and built a great label in the process. And so there's a little bit of a bittersweet separation there. But we worked it out with Atlantic, so they're, you know, Barsoup will still be involved with us, and we'll still be involved with them. They'll be doing our vinyl, and, you know, we'll do some EPs with them, and they'll still be Barsoup Love coming down the pipeline. And then there'll be Atlantic Love, too.
Right.
So, yeah.
Do you feel like with, you know, your fans who have been there from, like, day one, do you feel like maybe extra pressure, like with your first Atlantic release, you know, for like maybe the sound of change as much, or, you know,
yes,
mainstream.
There is some pressure there, but I haven't really even begun to get my head wrapped around that. I'm going to try and ignore all of those feelings. But yes, I mean, yeah, I mean, already we've had people come up to us and be like, so, you guys are on Atlantic, does that mean that you guys are going to, you know, be dating supermodels and have to make, you know, like, add a DJ to your band? And I mean, they can ask these real, like, legitimate questions. Like, I mean, Chris started this really funny rumor with this kind of clueless journalist, was, you know, talking about whatever, and he was like, yeah, actually, we're talking to David Hasselhoff about producing our next record. and you know, I mean, that seems the most outlandish thing you could possibly think of, but on our message board right now, there's this whole thread, and everybody's really worried about it, and, like, nobody's ever stopped to go, what are you talking about, you know? So there's definitely this climate of, like, things are changing, and we don't want our band to change that much, and what are they going to do to them? At the end of the day, really, there's just going to be another little logo printed on the CD next to the Barsoup dog.
Right.
That's about it.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how even that sort of would change people's perception. Even if we turned in, like, a four-track record with Ben and a guitar in a room and it sounded like total crap, they'd be like, oh, sounds so hi-fi, they spent all this money. Like, you know, I mean, they just have that, you know, I mean, it will be interesting to see what happens. I don't know. You know, I don't know. I'm not. I'm just going to make the record.
Do you know when that first record might happen?
Don't know yet. No limitations yet. I mean, right. we're going to start in February and March, and hopefully by the end of next year, it'll be out. But you know, fall is a really difficult time for newer bands to release records.
Ah.
You know, you got to compete with bigger established acts like U2 and Eminem and REM. So if you want a piece of that marketing puzzle, you best release it in late in the third quarter. And anyway,
well said.
I don't know.
Well said. Do you have anything, like any tracks laying around now that you think might fit into that?
Oh yeah, we've been demoing and stuff. Ben's got a good head of steam built up, and I'm pretty excited. I'm really excited actually. We've got some really good stuff coming together, and we could have played some stuff live on the tour, but we decided to kind of give it a rest and not show our hand too early. See what happens. But we're all really hungry. We're gonna take some downtime for December while Ben's obviously recovering, and then January we'll just sort of he'll finish writing up some of his demos and things like that, and then February and we're just chomping at the bit to get started. So. Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm very excited.
Thank you. I'm pretty excited too. We'll see though what happens.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I think we covered most of the stuff that I was wondering about. That's awesome. Like I actually wanted to see you guys. You guys played the Warfield here recently.
Yeah.
But this sold out. But I saw you in May here as well with that Ben Queller.
Oh yeah.
Which was very cool.
He was on the soundtrack too. I was kind of excited to see that.
Yeah. The soundtrack sounds like it's going to be really good.
It is awesome.
Yeah.
It's so awesome. I mean, it's one of those things that, like, because it's a cover song, it doesn't really feel like our music, so I can kind of listen to it and not be like, ugh, like, putting your own record. And then, I mean, all the other bands' covers are so good.
Yeah.
I mean, it really just makes me want to eat people.
You're still like you're a zombie.
I just feel like, I don't even know. Anyway, no, it's good. I'm really excited.
When does it come out, by the way?
The soundtrack comes out March 15th.
Okay.
And the game that it's going with is Stubbs the Zombie.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, go ahead and stop.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can stop because it's